Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. It's for 59 years. It's pretty incredible. To learn more about the PNWA and their upcoming Writers Conference, it'll be late July, you can head on over to pnwa.org. I will be at the Chuckanut Writers Conference in Bellingham, Washington, starting this Thursday. This Thursday, which is what? It's June 26th. I'll be there June 26th doing an author's masterclass, which has been sold out, I'm afraid. So there's no room left for that. But I'll be teaching a couple classes there. So if you're going to be at the Writers Conference, maybe you look for me, say hello. I always love talking to other writers. But that's about it right now. That's about all I have to say about me. But I have to say this about publishing. The world of publishing is changing rapidly, probably about time. For anyone who hasn't noticed, independent publishing has taken off. Traditional publishing is still doing just fine also, in my opinion, although people involved in it would probably say otherwise because I think they always do. But there's also a sort of middle road called, I don't know what we call it. I call it hybrid publishing. Booktrope Editions published my book, Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion. And they also published today's author, Miss Tess Thompson. It's the author of 6 books, unless I've counted wrong, including most recently, Tea and Primroses. She's also the author of the very popular Riversong trilogy. But Tess is someone who is flourishing in this in-between world, this hybrid world of publishing. Maybe not hybrid is not the right word. I don't know what she would call it. We'll have to ask her. But anyway, it's a very interesting story, hers. These are her first books she's written. It's all happened relatively soon. And what brought her here to the world of storytelling? What brought her to Booktrope? And why has she had such success? These are the questions I want answered, but I don't have to answer them myself. I can ask Tess, because she's here with me now. Tess, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Tess, novels. You came to novel writing, if I understand your biography, a little later in life. You didn't pop out of an MFA program at 25 and start writing novels. It came a little later on. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah, my background is actually in the theater. I went to USC and have a degree in acting. And my original dream or idea for my life was that I would have a life in the theater as a playwright and a director and actress. And so after I graduated from USC, I moved back up to the Northwest. I'm from Oregon, and I was very homesick when I lived in Los Angeles, and it was not really a good place for me. So I decided to come up here and worked a lot in the theater in the 90s, both as an actress and a director mostly, actually. And then in 2000, my first full-length play won a local contest here. Mm-hmm. And it won subsequently that turned into 3 productions.
Excellent.
And I remember sitting on opening night of the last one, and actually I was like 6 months pregnant with my oldest daughter, who's now 11. And I thought to myself, you know, I am not a playwright. It hit me like one of the voice from God or lightning or something. And
while you were watching the play?
Novels. Yeah, I just thought this is not a play that is just doesn't really my sensibilities do not are not a good fit for this American theater. I'm not edgy enough. I'm not. the kind of stories I'm interested in, the sort of characters I'm interested in are much more mainstream, much more like myself, my neighbors, my friends, my, you know, my women friends. And I thought, you know, I really should write something that I love to read, which I've you know, been reading since I was about 4 and a half, and I always have had my nose in a book, and I love novels. And so I just thought, you know, I'm just going to finally tackle this dream. I always thought I would write one, but I just wasn't sure when and how and all that. So I set a goal at that time that I would write my first novel by the time I was 40. And I had two children in between all that and had a full-time job in the corporate world. And finally, with the birth of my second child, I told my then husband, I'm not going back to work, and I'm going to stay home, and I'm going to write this novel that I've always wanted to write, and I'm going to raise these kids. So I did that, and I finished my first novel, which is River Song. By the time I turned 40, I made my goal, and then it took me a while to find the right publishing route. And that is a story in itself, if you're interested.
Sure.
I can tell you about how that all happened, because that's actually connected to USC.
Oh, fascinating. Well, before we get to that, I want to go back to that moment of you in the theater. And I think this is such a critical moment for creative people that I know it's true for me. I was absolutely certain I was going to be a novelist. That was all. I spent 20 years trying to do it. And it wasn't until the last 5 or 6 years that I really understood that my true interest was in nonfiction, memoir and essays and that sort of thing. So I can, speaking from my own experience, the difference between doing so, and of course you came out of the theater, so of course you naturally thought you wanted to do theater. That's what you had been trained in. That's what your acting and directing had been in. But the decision to let yourself tell the stories that you, or well, I'm telling stories too, to tell the story you actually want to tell is so important. It's so important because you really can't, you can't force the river, can you?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean,
the creative
I think
river.
For me, yeah, I think for me, and if you have to excuse me a little bit, I have had a terrible cold, so I have much more husky voice than normal. But
you sound
anyway,
good.
Anyway, yes, I thank you. I do agree that you have to find your own voice and the stories that you want to tell. And for me, I think the struggle was, you know, the sort of fiction that I loved, you know, were the classics and literary fiction and, you know, what I would call serious books. And I think that, and also I thought, you know, the play, the theater is serious. You know, we tell serious stories and things that really matter and all that, right? But I think that once I let myself go and just say, you know, I'm just going to tell a story about somebody like me, and, you know, put her in a situation that would be my worst nightmare or my best friend's or my girlfriend's, their worst nightmare. And what, and then, you know, how would she get out of that? And once I gave myself permission to just write what I was interested in, everything fell into place. And so I always tell people, you know, aspiring writers that, you know, don't worry about being like anybody else. Just find your own voice. Tell the stories that are inside you, and it will all flow.
Yeah. Boy, I agree with that. That is so true. That is so true. So you could feel the difference. You could feel the difference right away when you started writing your first novel. There's just the experience of sitting down to write felt different than trying to be a playwright.
Yeah, I think so. Well, for one thing, the play that did win a local contest, and it was an okay play, but it was a love story. And you know, that's really not the edgy sensibility of the American theater at this point in time. And, you know, it was just this sweet story about this man who had been in a car accident, paraplegic, and a young woman comes to help him and work for him. And she's had her own damage, and they fall in love. And that's the sort of story that's interesting to me. All of my novels are about, you know, people who've had struggles and find redemption through love and community. That's basically the stories that I tell, and that's what I'm interested in my life: connections, human connections, and light instead of dark.
Yeah, And although, of course, you know what's interesting about that, and I teach this when I teach memoir, is that, and one of the reasons I love to teach memoirs is you kind of have to write about the light because that's the story that most memoirists tell. It's coming out of their troubles. But in order to see the light, you have to show the darkness. Not to glorify the darkness, but in order to be able to see the light, it has to be in contrast against the darkness.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And for sure, I mean, in all storytelling, I mean, as you know, you have to start with something shaking them, you know, shaking up their world in a very, you know, in the theater we called it raising the stakes, you know, but it's the same concept that you have to put them in the dark in order for them to journey through to the light.
To want the light, to choose it,
and
to appreciate it.
That's right.
Yeah, but to what? And the difference, I think, that I'm hearing from you, and I think that this goes on within the artistic world of where does your story land, is the trajectory of your narratives is unequivocally toward the light. You're not going to waffle in whether it exists or it's real or it's something that you should go towards. Your choice is
absolutely.
It's there, go for it. Love matters.
Yeah,
I'm not
and
here
choose
to debate
love,
you.
Always choose.
Yeah, choose it.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, I think about this all the time. Like, you know, what's the reason that you write or, you know, what's my purpose here? And every writer has a different answer for that. And what I've discovered over time and just really learning who I am and what matters to me is I will probably never win the Nobel Prize or the Pulitzer or whatever. I'm a good writer. I'm not the greatest. But what my purpose as an artist is to shed light and to give hope and inspiration through the stories that I tell. And that's what I hear from readers. Like, it was inspiring to me. I felt better after I was done, you know, with it. And so that for me is enough to keep going, to say, yeah, this is something that is giving light to the world instead of taking, making it darker or taking instead of giving. So, you know, you have to come to that point as an artist of what is it that I'm trying to say and why does it matter? And once you figure that out, I think the stories flow out of you more easily as well.
Yes, absolutely. And kind of what you're doing, I think, is you're validating what you believe to be important. What you're finally saying is that this matters to me is enough. I don't need a Pulitzer Prize. I mean, Pulitzer Prizes, those are all fine, but I hear this from a lot of writers. Your job on Earth is not to win Pulitzer Prize. No one's job on Earth is to win a frickin' Pulitzer Prize. That's nice if it comes. Your job is to shine the light that comes through you, not through me or through William Kennedy or whoever. It's through you. And so it sounds like you validated what you valued and said, because I value it, that's enough. I don't need more than that.
Right. That's perfectly said. Yes.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And so now you've had the experience, and this is a lovely thing. You've published these books. You've got a bunch of them out now. It's great. And now people are reading them. People are reading them. And perhaps you're hearing from some of those people. It sounds like you have. What's that like for you?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty amazing, really, what's happened with my books because, and I tell this to people all the time, too, like, if you love something, just do it because every good thing will come from it. Just believe in it. Just commit to it. So for us, you know, we put Riversong out in 2011. Nobody had ever heard of me. It was this little tiny company at the time, Booktrope.
Yeah.
I believe I was their first fiction. I could be wrong. I might.
Really?
I was one of the first. Yes.
Okay.
And it went, you know, it was quiet at first, but about 6 months in, the book went crazy, and we've sold over 100,000 copies.
What?
I actually think much more than that at this point. Yeah, it's probably closer to 120 or something, and we've given away probably a million copies.
Yeah,
that might be a slight exaggeration, but a lot. And So, of course, with the strategy that new author, get people interested, and then I've just been trying to put out as many books a year as I can, you know, to build my catalog. You know, we have a kind of a strategy about how I can actually make a living off of this.
Right.
But it did hit me one day. I went to a concert at the Key Arena, and my friend I was with, she said, look around this room. You've five times the number of people that are in this room have bought your book.
Wow.
And that was the moment where I thought, wow, that's truly amazing. Because when you're sitting in your office and you're just, you know, you're writing from your heart and you're hoping that it's something that will resonate with a reader, but you don't know, and you really are writing it for yourself, honestly.
That's
right?
Right.
And so, yeah, to hear from people on a daily basis now, I get notes from people. It is so gratifying. I mean, of course, everybody could understand why it would be, but especially it is a little bit of a lonely profession because you do it is solo work for the most part.
Yes, it is.
And so, yeah, to hear from people, and that's something. I guess the ones that I love, of course, when they say it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't put this book down, and that of course is a thrill because my goal is to write well written page turners, but. But to hear, like, this character was so much like myself, or this story reminded me of my relationship with my mother, and it illuminated it, or it gave me insight somehow, or it just made me feel less alone. That is the only thing a writer really ever wants, is to hear that something they wrote mattered to somebody else. And so that's been pretty thrilling, I have to admit.
Oh, it's awesome. It's just a great,
I
mean, they're perfect strength. You don't know them. It's kind of magical.
Right.
I talk about it on the show a lot, but I just think it's so important to take a moment and appreciate it because you don't know each other. You two are strangers that found each other through this book. It meant a lot to you to write it. And now this person who you almost certainly will never meet, now it means something to them. I just think, I couldn't imagine wanting to do anything else in a way, just given that.
Oh, I know. And yeah, just what you said gave me goosebumps. And I just know that as a child, you know, I grew up in this really small town and, you know, I was just, you know, I was kind of a, you might call a little bit of a nerd, a smart girl, you know, I loved books.
Yeah.
My family was not wealthy, but I learned about the library when I was 5 years old. I thought, oh my gosh, I can go in here and pick any book I want. To get home with
Yeah.
And that experience of as a reader, especially when you're a kid or a young adult, because your world is so small, and it opened up this whole world to me, and I felt those characters, that I knew them, that they were my friends, and I mean, talk about I'm not particularly starstruck about a movie star or something, but you introduce me to a writer that's meant something to me, you know, and I'll be just completely tongue-tied. And, So yes, there's such a magic to writing, I think particularly memoir and fiction, and you know where it's where you can delve into a character and understand their story. There's nothing like it. Although that said, I think that's what the role of art is in our society is
absolutely
that it's magical. You know, it illuminates the human condition. It makes us feel less alone. There's nothing like it.
And magical. It's interesting because I loved what you were saying about as you were describing the experience of being a girl and discovering books and these characters being like your friends. And I've certainly had that experience where I wished I was on that journey with Gandalf and Frodo, and I want to be with those dudes. And so when I was a boy, but the job of the writer is so particular, and it is magical in this way, I think, in that in order to do your job well, you must believe in something that doesn't exist. You must believe in that story as if it was happening to you at that moment. That is the best way to convey it. And yet it isn't real in the physical sense. And yet it is your belief in it that makes it real in the minds of these strangers who will then befriend these people that you learned in your imagination but who don't exist and yet are friends to both of you.
Yeah.
We take that part of it for granted, but it's all just between our ears. Yet you must believe in it for it to work. You must feel it. You must be afraid. You must be loved. It must make you cry as if someone actually left you when no one has. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is magic in that way because it's not real.
Absolutely. And to me, that's the same. It's like faith. You know, you can't.
It is faith.
You can't hold it in your hand. It's faith. And absolutely, that's where the magic is. And, yeah, and, you know, people ask me all the time, well, where do you come up with your ideas? And I have never been able to answer it. I have no idea.
No one can.
They just come to me.
No, but you know where they come from? Okay, I'm now going to share the physics of creativity with you. You ready?
Oh, good. Oh, yay. I can't wait.
This is copyrighted. But this is true. I'm going to be teaching this again. This is the acronym. ART, ART, ask, receive, translate. That's what you do. You ask a question. What do I care about? The answer comes, but not from you, and you know that. Not really from the little you, and then you translate it into words. Ask, receive, translate. That's where it comes from your curiosity, from your interest. What do you think of that? Ask, receive,
I love that.
ART.
That is just, that's magical. Can I put that up on my bulletin board, please?
Yeah,
that is awesome.
Please do.
Yeah.
Ask, receive, translate. But that's all it is. You're a translator of what comes to you, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you hear your characters talking to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's just what it is. No one believes the writer sometimes, but it's true. You're listening to them. You know, we have, believe it or not, we have a guest here who wants to ask. Looks like we still have some time left. I think he wants to ask you a question, Tess.
I think we
ought to let him do that. I believe this is Jeff. Is that you?
It is, Bill. Another outstanding interview, and thanks for allowing me to call in. Hi, Tess.
My pleasure.
Hi.
Hello. I'm sure it's fairly impossible to write while you Zumba.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to ask about the Zumba.
Well, yes.
I am always fascinated and interested in what another writer's daily process is. Mm-hmm. Can you take me to the day of writing with Tess Thompson, please?
Yes, I would be happy to. Great question, but I have to tell you that what's funny about the Zumba thing is I have had so many plot points fall into my head in the middle of a Zumba class.
Yes.
So I find that exercise, because I'm focusing maybe on, you know, moving my feet a certain way or something, that it frees up my mind. It allows it to be empty enough to maybe be filled with the right answer. Does that make sense?
Well, listen, if you ask a question, right, what's your job? If I ask you a question as the interviewer, what's my job? To listen. Stop talking, stop thinking, and listening. But sometimes when we write, we say, what should happen in this scene? We're asking this question. And our little brains are going, bep, 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 trying to answer the question. And then when you finally stop thinking and stop trying to do it yourself and start exercising and your brain shuts down, the answer, which has been wanting to come, finally is allowed to come. I think that's why it happens.
I totally agree. Right. Yeah, you said that so much better than I was able to explain it.
This is what I do as I talk about this stuff. So, all right, so Jeff wants to know, what is the day? Do you get up and write right away? Do you do it in the middle? When do you do it? What's your work day like?
Okay, so I am the single mother of two little girls. They're 8 and 11. And so my rule has always been, when they are not here, my butt's in the seat. So I'd get up, drop them, you know, get them ready for school, and I drop them off. And then I always go to my exercise class. And then I come home and basically work from the, you know, about usually about 10 until about 3. And, you know, with little breaks in there, but I'm pretty disciplined. But what I do is first draft, I write very quickly. I commit to 2,500 words a day, sometimes more, but never less when I'm writing on a first draft. And I do not edit. I do not allow my critic to come in there. I just allow, you know, Anne Lamott, I just write that shitty first draft. And that usually takes me, my books are land around 85,000 words. So that usually takes me about 2 months, you know, maybe a month and a half, depending on, what's going on with my children and all that sort of thing. Then I go back and do the painstaking work of fiddling with things, moving stuff around. Sometimes a plot point will change for me because I'm such a character-driven writer that sometimes they dictate things and they take over and decide to to go a different way. You know, you guys, I'm sure, know how that works. But so that's usually, and so then after I'm done with that second draft, I send it to my editor, who's just absolutely fantastic. We just finished our sixth book together, and she sends me, you know, 10 pages of notes and all kinds of things. And she's an absolutely fabulous story editor. And she understands my genre, that, you know, it really needs to move quickly, that I can't, because sometimes I get, my Achilles heel is I get really interested in, you know, flashbacks, and I put them in the wrong places and all that.
Yeah.
So she helps me sort through all that. And so then I go back and write a third draft. And that's usually the one that's pretty close to what we end up with. So that's basically my process.
And so that's how you do it. And so when you do that first draft, you really just let yourself just go right through. You don't ever say, oh, you know what? I know the beginning is wrong. I'm going to go back and you just go from beginning to end, just get it down.
Yeah, for the most part, that's not always completely true. Sometimes something big will occur to me and I do go back and fix it, because it's so central to something that I have to fix it right then. But actually, the thing I forgot to say is I always start with really detailed character studies, and that, you know, the actors in me.
I do
every detail you can imagine about a person. I try to get that down first, because when I have that in my mind so clearly, it really does help that first draft flow out of me more easily. And then I always start with a story arc, you know, just the inciting mm-hmm. event, you know, the whole, you know, but it's loose and a little bit in the middle, because I like to have a little bit of freedom to move around if I want to.
Absolutely. And I would assume that your acting, I did theater as well when I was a young, much, much younger man, but I did it for a few years and I really liked it, and I always had an interest in that. And I always felt that the experience was good for me, because especially as a writer, you're having to recall emotion to recreate the scenes. And of course, that's the job of the actor, isn't it? Your whole job is to find the true emotion for the experience that you're not actually having. And did that theater training help you when you went to writing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only that, as an actor, you study story structure so really closely. I mean, every scene, you break it down into beats. So that is in my, you know, subconscious, just from so many years of studying literature and studying plays as an actress and as a reader. So for sure. And also the character work. I can see, I don't know, I'm not sure that every writer is like this, but for me, it plays out like it's a movie in front of my head as I'm writing. I can see them moving around the room. I know, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. That early training is in my work all the time.
Yeah. Well, listen, boy, this was a fast 30 minutes, but I have time for one more question, Tess. And what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I know you are. Okay. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
Do what you love, even if you're not the best.
But you know what's the beauty of that, Tess? You are the best at your version of that. You are the best at doing what it is you love. I know it sounds like Pollyanna, but it's true. You know, no one can write your books better than you. They can't.
That's right. It's like the Dr. Seuss. Nobody can be a better you than you, or whatever.
No, it's true. Or what is, like, what was it? To might as well be yourself, everyone else's.
Yes,
thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. Tea and Primroses is out. Yes, we can. Amazon, Kindle is probably your best bets. And when should we look for your next book?
June 30th.
All right, Tess. Good luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Love. You see that? What do I always talk about at the end of the show? I talk about love. And that's just what you want to talk about. Love, love, love. I'll be here next week talking to Mary Cronk Farrell, wonderful writer and person. But until then, just like Tess said, do what you love. Whether anybody tells you you're the best at it or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You will never be happier in your life doing what you love, being with who you love. Ah, love is all the way.